All right, anyway, hour number two is here. 301-230-0980. Coming up in this hour, you will hear Terry McLaurin's unfreaking believable. If you love football, if you love Terry, if you love nuance, and you're not doing cookie cutter radio like so many others do, you're going to love Terry's response to my question that you will hear and a 4+ minute conversation with him after the game yesterday, after the 2 touchdowns, about how he rocked Deonte Banks to sleep. Wait for this answer. And I can't wait to share it with you guys. And Terry was awesome. Not only on the field, but after. And answering it and explaining it, I think, in a way that we all can understand it. And then some more on top of that. Plus, you're also going to hear from Bobby Wagner. Caught up with him. Another good dude. Leader of the defense. He had already talked to the media. He was packed up, ready to go, walking out. I stopped him. I said, "Hey, Bobby," I said, did you already talk?" Because I didn't know he already talked, but I just wanted to ask. He said, "Yeah, I'll make time for you." And spent 4.5 minutes with me, and we can bring that to you. So, this is why we go to games, is to get that kind of immediate reaction, access, what have you. And then we try and do other stuff throughout the week. So just stay tuned. We got a lot coming for you this week. 7-2 Commanders over the New York Giants, 27-22. Let's get back to it on the phones and get you guys continuously involved. Don't forget, Jay Gruden will also join us. Our guy Jason and Laurel is next up on the Team 980. Jason, how are you?
Hey, Chris. How you doing?
What's up, Jace?
My favorite day of the week, Motown Monday, only better if it's a victory Monday.
Yes,
and let
sir.
Me tell you how powerful this is. Despite driving into work this morning and getting in a car accident,
oh no,
I'm still having a great day.
Wait. Are you?
I'm okay.
You're okay. All right. Is everybody else okay?
I'm okay. Everybody's okay. The Prius is a little bit worse for the wear, but that's okay.
Mm. I'm sorry to hear all that. And, unfortunately, I don't know what happened, but there's, a lot of accidents just routinely because there's a lot of cars on the road. And then, as we know, there are a lot of aggressive maniacs who should never be behind the wheel of a car. And this country is going to hell in a handbasket because of it.
Yeah, well, sun was in my eyes. Didn't see the car in front of me. Lucky the safety equipment almost stopped me before I hit the car, but I still hit the car.
Yeah.
But yesterday was such a joy. It's so cool to be a fan right now, and I'm so happy with the play in the field. The one thing I wanted to ask you, and I hadn't heard you spoke on it yet, but I keep seeing these reports about people wanting to come here. Is that real? Do you think that'll play into the deadline?
There's a lot. Yes, I believe that people are looking at Washington, A, because they're winning games, B, because of Jaden Daniels, C, because of Dan Quinn, and looking at it and going, that's exciting. I want to be a part of that. Absolutely, I believe that. Now, the other side to that, Jason, that's a good question. I hadn't brought it up yet. The other part of that, just talking to some people, and I know Florio wrote it up, there's some suspicion that that was leaked by either Bob Myers, who was the former Golden State Warriors executive, current ESPN analyst, who was a consultant and still is on the payroll for Josh Harris, that he may have leaked that to Adam Schefter because they both work for ESPN. There's suspicion that the Commanders organization and hierarchy, whether it be Dan Quinn, whether it be whoever, may have generated that to artificially maybe lower the prices or draw more attention to, hey, players, agents read that stuff, they hear that stuff, and they're like, oh yeah, that's right. Man, what they're building there in Washington, yeah, that's a good spot for my client. They got plenty of salary cap room too. That doesn't hurt either. You know what I'm saying? So we don't know the actual authenticity of the story, but do I believe that players and agents are looking around the league going, what they're building in Washington, what they're doing with the people that they're doing it, with the money they have available, and the kid that they have at quarterback, hell freaking yeah, we want to be there.
It's exciting, but I'll be honest with you. I don't know in my heart of hearts where I say, hey, hold the capital, make a huge play in free agency and draft what we can draft next year, or we make a move for this year, because it is so neat what's going on. But I think if I take a second and not get too excited, I think I'd rather have Peters have all his draft capital, have another great draft class, and I think our free agent signings next year could be even better than they were this year, and they were out of the park this year. I mean, they haven't really had a bad signing, so to speak, yet.
Yeah, Mike Davis is about the only one that has been a complete flop, quite honestly, and, you know, that's probably unfair to him because he was going against Malik Nabers in week two, and he just got abused, and he missed a bunch of tackles and whatever, and he hasn't really gotten off the mat since then. It's just the way it is. But that's about it in terms of bad, you know, contributions or non-contributions. Unless I'm forgetting somebody. That's about it.
It's an exciting time. I'll let you go because I know you got other callers.
Yeah. Thanks,
Chris. 12 wins this year, I'm telling you. 12 wins.
I like it.
It's great to talk to you.
I like it. Good to talk to you. I'm glad you're okay. And obviously, yes, the Sun Monster is brutal. I mean, I drive home every day when I leave here 4:30, 4:45. Now, it'll be a little bit different this week, starting this week, because of the time change. So it's clearly darker, quicker, earlier. But the Sun Monster for the last month has been awful driving out of D.C. I mean, there and I'm sure coming into D.C. and the D.C. area in the morning, it's really bad. I mean, so, you know, again, and you know, have all these reckless maniacs driving around, cutting everybody off, thinking that they're running the Daytona 500 when they actually suck. They're just horrible human beings. And they're probably fans of somebody that I can't mention on the radio, but you might know him. He's got something important going on tomorrow. anyway, Alex in Alexandria, next up on the Team 980. What's up, Alex? How are you?
How are you?
What's good. Up, Alex?
Good, man. I'll take the win. Of course, I'll take the W. But I'm just, I wish we would have scored from the half-yard line, man. You got to put, I don't care. I know you got to win with class and all that, but how many times team have done it to us in the past? This is a different thing now. I like for this team to have the killing instinct. Just like last week, Chicago should have never came off on the second half to play because the game should have been over by halftime last week. This week, again, we have problems.
Well, when you say we had problems, that was a choice to be professional and sportsmanlike at the end, right? I mean, when they had to score, Alex, they scored, you know, for the most part. I mean, not every drive, but as we've chronicled, right, the Giants go on a long 16-play drive, tied up at 7-7. The offense immediately comes back with a 6-minute 11-play drive, 70 yards right down their throat. When the offense gets a three and out from the defense right after that, takes over with 5 minutes and 20 seconds left in the second quarter, they could kill it. They could sit on it. They could go three and out. They can get a first down, still give it back to the – they killed off everything but 6 seconds and scored a touchdown, which completely changed, I think, the game plan for the Giants and took them out of running the football because all of a sudden it's – instead of 17-7, it's 21-7. Instead of 14-7, it's 21-7. So, you know, I mean, we have to be fair and say, yes, sure, you'd like more, but not every game is going to be a blowout. And the Giants, I mean, to not allow a sack to that defense, even though we're without Kayvon Thibodeau, to not allow a sack to that defense and to run for 150 yards without Brian Robinson is mind-blowing. Mind-blowing.
That was not a good take, by the way. Because what if he fumbles the ball? What if you get a turnover and they run it back? I'm talking about the end of the game.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, that Alex made. Yeah. Yeah. I love Alex normally, but, you know,
that's
like,
I didn't
agree with that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like.
Of course, we want
you know
to
what's
the
interesting,
zone,
Vic? But if they didn't have a 5-point lead, right? And say they had a 3-point lead and got that final first down, you know what people would be pissed about? Is that they didn't score because of what? The spread. Because they then wouldn't have covered the stupid spread, right? So here, Not that Dan Quinn or Cliff Kingsbury or Jaden Daniels cares one rat's ass about the spread. They had the 5-point lead. They get that final first down from Rodriguez at the one. And again, they don't, again, the spread didn't even factor in for them. But my point being is people would have been legitimately upset about that because they, like, depending on where you got it, you got it at 4, I got it at 4, you know, 4.5, whatever. The bottom line is they had already covered with a 5-point lead because of the failed 2-point conversions and because they just didn't stop. I mean, again, even like I told you earlier in the show, they take over with 9.5 minutes left. See, again, this is I'm going to continue to just tell you how it is. Okay? I don't see everything. I miss a lot of things, but I don't miss the important stuff. Okay? And I'm going to tell you, and I pointed this out on Twitter yesterday, or X, they took over at 9:19 in the fourth quarter after the Giants scored the first of two fourth quarter touchdowns on the, you know, the double bounce off, missed tackle, whatever, Daniel Jones. They stopped the 2-point conversion. It's, again, it's 24-16, an 8-point lead, with still 9.5 minutes left to go. And the Commanders kill six plus, or almost 6 minutes, and still get points. Now, they didn't get a touchdown, but and still get points. And that included a 3rd-and-9, 28-yard conversion to Austin Ekeler on a little screen dump with Daniels. That included a 3rd-and-1 run conversion from Jeremy McNichols for 3 yards. That included, I'm sorry. That wasn't the fourth down conversion. That on 4th-and-2 from the Giants, too. And this was an interesting call, right? At this point, you're 10 of 10 on 4th downs. 4th-and-2 from the Giants, too. Up 24-16. You've had success all year long. I'm sure there are some analytics amigos and some computer model that you people all pay attention to and let and just slurp up like a bunch of, like a bunch of thirsty dogs that said, go, 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 go. And Dan Quinn chose to go for the field goal. Why? Because they were already up by 8. And you have a chance to take an 11-point lead with a short cybered field goal, which means what? Say it with me, boys and girls. They not only need 2 scores, but in order to tie and extend the game, they need a touchdown, a 2-point conversion, and a field goal. Technically, 3 scores. Okay? It was the absolute right decision from Dan Quinn. And don't let any other of these number knuckleheads tell you otherwise. It was the absolute right decision. And they killed the clock. 301-230-0980. More of your calls coming up. Telly in D.C., Rock and Laurel straight ahead. Terry McLaurin just past the bottom of the hour. Hear his explanation about how he set up Deontay Banks, as we said he and they would. The only radio show that focused on that matchup all week last week was this one that you're listening to right now on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. All right, good to have you with us right here on the Team 980 on a Victory Motown Monday. 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. Again, the story of this game is not just, like, Jaden Daniels made some unbelievable throws. The 31-yarder to Noah Brown, sweet spot right over the linebackers, kind of in that zone. I guess just the sweet spot of the zone over the linebackers in front of the corners and safeties. He made the throw to Olamide Zaccheaus, which we've already talked about. The throw to Terry McLaurin at the end of the first. You know, there's 4 or 5 throws every game that makes you go, holy good God, did they get it right? Now, that's not to say he's perfect, right? He misses a couple of things. I still think he missed Luke McCaffrey on kind of a wheel route touchdown in the red zone and checked it underneath. Fine. Not fine, but like, okay, you can live with it because a mistake wasn't made. If he didn't think he could get it in there, I got to trust his judgment. You know why I got to trust his judgment? Because as I look at my fancy schmancy stat sheet, I look at interceptions for Jaden Daniels after 9 games, and I see the number 2. Then I look at fumbles lost. And while he's had several fumbles, they've recovered them, which maybe is luck. Maybe it's also more than luck. I see fumbles lost, and I see the team only has 1. So if I said Jaden Daniels, the quarterback, only has 2, Mariota didn't have any when he played the game for against Carolina. If the starting quarterback's only got 2 interceptions and the team has only lost 1 fumble, which ironically happened in that Carolina game, that's 3 turnovers as a team in 9 games. That's 1 every 3 games on average. So, and this is what I have to remind myself of. Yeah, he may miss something here and there, and that happens 1 to 2 times per game. I mean, I see it. I think you all see it. Some of you disputed that he had a safety coming up, whatever. He may miss 1 or 2 or maybe even 3 things a game. But right now, and for 9 games, as a 9-game sample size, while he may be missing 1 or 2 things, he's not making the killer mistake. And it's not because he's not throwing the football and they're running 90% of the time. They're doing everything. I mean, again, he's a huge part of the running game. He's obviously the starting quarterback, which means the ball is in his hands from, you know, on every play. They've got 3 turnovers in 9 games. 3. So you can live with some of the stuff that he maybe misses or bypasses because of that. All right, let's get to Rock in Laurel on line 2, JT the Vic. Let's get Rock in here on the Team 980. Rock, how are you?
I'm great. I wanted to say, piggyback off that last caller, like, first of all, kneeling was the correct call because you want to get out of that stadium without any injuries, and that was the only way we could guarantee a win, because if the Giants got the ball back, they could have scored a touchdown, 2-point conversion, onside kick, and we could get hurt.
They didn't even need the 2-point conversion on that. Like, the game was 27-22. Like, if you fumble that, which I guess theoretically you could still fumble the snap on a kneel down, but if you fumble a handoff exchange and they pick it up and return it all the way, you lose. You lose, you know, with a touchdown, of course, and they don't even need the extra point or the 2-point conversion at that point.
Exactly. And if you look around the league right now, there's a lot of bad coaching. I'm talking like Sirianni going for 2 points every time, Bears play calling, the Saints coach got fired, Raiders offensive coordinator got fired. Like, Dan Quinn is making the difference. And on top of that, like you said, Jaden is protecting the ball. He throws the ball low, not because he's underthrowing. He's saving his receivers from getting blown up. Mm-hmm. They're not taking hits. Look at Derek Carr.
Yeah, no, you're right. Well, that throw to Chris Olave. Oh, I mean, you know, and obviously everything is a mess in New Orleans. Hence the reason why they fired Dennis Allen. You know, not to say it's all his fault, but you know, clearly that is. Clearly, that is a problem, and Derek Carr just came back. I'm with you. I'm totally with you. Listen, I think the best way to say it is this Commander's offense, while it's not perfect, and while there are certain games you would want more, i.e. in the red zone against the Bears, against the Giants in week 2, you know, a thing here, a thing there, a missed, you know, where he doesn't see something. Again, it is... The best way I could put it, and I don't know if this is going to make sense. I don't know if it's like a Lamborghini because I don't know enough about Lamborghinis, but it is a souped-up luxury vehicle right now that just runs perfectly, almost perfectly, like almost without a hiccup, if that makes sense.
I agree. It's the coaching.
Well, yes, but it's the players too. I mean, make no mistake about it. You don't win with great coaching and bad players.
True.
You know, so I mean, like we could sit here and say, well, it's all Cliff Kingsbury. I think it's a good amount of Cliff Kingsbury, but without that dude under center or behind center, and without the dude that's snapping it to him, and without Cosme to his right, and without Brandon Coleman, who missed a game last week and is a rookie and shut down the Giants' pass rush, which was the highest sack rate in the NFL. I mean, all of that. And this is without Brian Robinson on the road. And they still ran for 150 yards and didn't give up a sack. Unbelievable. Thank you, Rock. Appreciate it. Let's get to Telly in D.C. here before the bottom of the hour, and we'll hear from Terry McLaurin on the other side. What's up, Telly? How are you?
Hello, to the Redskins.
Telly.
What's poppin', man?
What's shaking, man?
Hey, no doubt, man. Hey, look, remember right after the Baltimore game, I was like, yo, man, I don't like what they did. B-Rob was out, and they feel like they had to do something different. I said, you know, I take the Allen learning. Well, it looked like they took the L and learning, too. They shot B-Rob out, and they had them three running backs running all over the field. Shout out to my man, C-Rob. He was doing his thing. I actually thought that he was going to be the backup to B-Rob, but I'm happy over the we have a great running back situation mm-hmm. back there. And
yeah.
I'm loving it. And I'm not mad at all. The last quarter pretty much stole my thunder. But I look at it different as far as the nail down. I don't think it was about being respectful. It's about, yo, we right here. Let's get up out of here. We got another game next week. Let's get out of here healthy. Ain't no need to kick the ball off and run down the field off or kickoff and risk injury or whatever. Get off the field. And that's disrespect to me. You kneeling right there on the one. And they know they could have got it in. But nah, let's go home. Hell to the Redskins, man. You be easy.
All right, thank you, Telly. Appreciate you as always. Listen, you know, again, I don't give a rat's ass about line spreads and whatever, but just for whatever it's worth, they had already covered it. Okay? But I'm sure the Fuhrer would have been a lot more. But that's the right decision, not only from a sportsmanship and from a, like, do right by people thing, which does matter, but also from a, hey, man, you never know what can happen. Now, unfortunately, you have to snap the ball to kneel down. So, yes, something still could happen. But there is the snapping of the ball. Then there's the handing of the ball off if you're trying to score. More bad can happen in that scenario, than the scenario that they chose. All right, 2:30 on the nose. Time for a trending alert, and we've got lots of NFL news. Jay Gruden straight ahead at 3 o'clock. But Terry McLaurin, I caught up with him in the locker room for about 4.5 minutes. You will hear his awesome answer, his awesome explanation of the first of two touchdowns that he scored yesterday. You'll hear it next on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. All right, everybody, we welcome you back. Good to have you with us. Again, Jay Gruden expected to join us in his normal Monday spot at 3 o'clock. You'll still hear from Bobby Wagner, the leader of the Commanders' defense. But right now, after yesterday's two-touchdown performance that we've touched on a little bit throughout the show, I caught up with Terry McLaurin along with a small group of reporters, but I asked all the questions in this particular sequence so we can play it all together and let you hear it. It's a little bit more than 4 minutes. Terry McLaurin, after catching his fifth and sixth touchdowns, after a seventh win, after he rocked Deontay Banks to sleep, just as we said he would, Terry McLaurin with me after yesterday's win at MetLife Stadium.
Terry, just one on the first touchdown.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, obviously run the pick. you know, and then you run underneath with the slant. Is it the suddenness of the route on the slant or the pick that maybe frees you up a little bit?
That's a really good question, and it was almost film study for me this week, honestly. I knew Banks liked to really slow play routes in the red zone. He likes to kind of, no pun intended, bank inside, meaning he takes inside leverage, and I knew he was playing a little head up on that route, and so I watched the Cleveland game when Amari Cooper kind of rocked him a little bit, and it's more of a, that was more of a true slant, and mine was kind of more of a one-step slant, but the same principles apply. He's not really aggressive in the red zone for whatever reason, and so I knew if I came off a little urgently, he would probably try to get hands on quickly, and that can make a really bang bang play. So I came off really slow. I was telling Jay, no, I'm a slow player, whether it was a fade or a slant, I'm a slow play him and just have him kind of relax on the snap, and then the suddenness of the outside stick to win inside. And like I said, he threw the ball low and away, and only I had a chance to get it.
So it's come off slow off the line, and then the sudden,
and then that was more just like I may not run it every time like that, like the one against Baltimore, that was a little bit more of a 1-2 stick for the fade. But this one, just off of the film study I've been seeing, I just knew, like, a lot of corners sometimes get down there in the red zone, they get hands on you quick, but he's kind of waiting for your move. And so when knowing I have a one-step slant, I didn't want to be too urgent, but at the same time I wanted to use enough suddenness that I could still win on the inside move. So that was just a little bit of film study on my part, just trying to be ready for the moment. And when it came up, honestly, we had the same route concept against them in week two. We just didn't quite hit it, but for it to come up again, I was excited.
You're one away from your career high in terms of touchdowns. You had 7 in your rookie year. You got 6 now. Mm-hmm. Does that mean anything? I mean, a lot of times players say they don't have statistical goals.
But... Yeah. I have goals in my head that I had coming into this season, but honestly, I'm really just enjoying the process and the way we're winning, the way we're preparing each and every week. And I'm having fun with this group of guys. It just seems like every single week, a new guy is stepping up and making plays, and that's fun to be a part of, because not just myself, but so many of these other guys train all year long to be ready for their opportunities. And when you play on an unselfish team, that nobody really cares who gets the credit, you see performances like you're seeing across the season where you don't know who's going to make the play, but it's going to be somebody in this room, and we trust all 11 in that huddle. So, coming into this season, I just wanted to really, just take a step in my game. You know, obviously last year didn't go as we anticipated, but myself, I just want to be accountable and write down some things that I wanted to get better on this offseason. It's really refreshing to feel like you put the work in and it's starting to really show, and you continue to build the trust from your coaches and your teammates.
At 7-2, and just the belief, does that come from being able to answer bad things in a game? Like they score and you guys immediately answer.
Sure.
You know, right before the half, obviously, you immediately answer after a timeout and things are kind of like, ooh.
Right.
Does that mean something extra to a team during a game?
It means everything to be able to withstand the momentum swings in a football game. And, you know, those guys get paid as well, so we know they're going to make plays. And like I said, whether it's the defense holding the offenses this year and for us to get a chance to get the ball back, or if they give up a touchdown, we're coming back and responding with a touchdown to put pressure on their offense again. Mm-hmm. We know our defense is going to eventually get home and create turnovers. And so I think that's just the camaraderie we built with one another, offense and defense, the competitiveness that we have in practice, to where we come out here and this is what we do. Like, there's nothing special. There's no secret sauce. It's just the work that we put in is the secret. The love for one another is why we're having the success, and our ability to execute when we need it most. Like DQ says, winning time moments. You're starting to see that week in and week out. And so we got to find a way to keep that going on top of cleaning up the mistakes as well. But, I like where we're at right now, but, you know, it's, we still got a long way to go, so we're looking forward to the grind.
All right, that is Commander's star wide receiver Terry McLaurin, who after a slow start to the year has been on a torrid pace. Now 6 touchdowns, 1 away from, again, tying his career high. You heard his answer to that. Not that he was thinking about that, but I thought he had a good answer. What you didn't hear was, I think, Nikki Javala, before I started asking questions, asked Terry about, I think, the second touchdown, which comes, of course, in the red zone because it's an 18-yard touchdown, and, of course, his first one as well. So he scores 2 red zone touchdowns, and how he said he's been really, really, really honed in on working on his red zone game. And I've said that leading up into the year. I said, look, unfortunately, I know he's had a terrible situation here. And I know it's not largely on him. But there are guys that have been in terrible situations that have produced bigger and better numbers. Like, I love Terry. He's such a good dude. And he's an excellent receiver. But he needed to step up too. It's not just because Jaden Daniels is here. It's not just because Cliff Kingsbury is here. Terry stepped up his game. And did you hear his explanation of what he learned in film study this week on how Deontay Banks slow plays guys in the red zone? He said, normally, guys that are lined up, and of course, you're in, you know, basically you're in man coverage, right? I mean, the first touchdown comes from what, the 2 yard line, 3 yard line? One yard line. Right? So, of course, guys are going to be right up in your grill. And he's like, normally, and this makes all the sense in the world, in compressed space, guys are going to be right on you. They're going to be hands on you. They're going to be grabbing you because they know they can get away with it. Deontay Banks, when I watched him against Cleveland, when I watched film this week, I saw that he liked to slow play things. He liked to wait for guys to develop the routes. So, the Commanders run two receivers to the left side of Jaden Daniels, to the left side of the formation. One, the inside slot, and I think it was McCaffrey, but I can't remember, runs like a vertical little route, right? Which essentially is a pick, or not a rub, but I call it a pick. Maybe people call it differently. I don't know. So it kind of frees up the over-the-top defender for McCaffrey or whoever the receiver was so that he can't come down and jump the inside part of the slant and the quick slant to Terry. So because of that, Terry is able to take basically a jab step, and because Deontay Banks is slow playing it and not getting his hands on him, which Terry knew, which is different than most or almost all, Terry's able to take a jab step, boom, cut it in, slant, touchdown, easy. So both things had to work. And when I saw it live, I was like, oh, that's interesting. I wonder if I'm seeing that the right way, because I thought the pick and the suddenness of, again, the quick slant, like, kind of worked in concert. So that's why I wanted to ask him that question, and you heard his answer. And he liked my question, which I appreciate. Thank you very much, Terry. But I don't know, man. I don't know everything, but I love little nuance like that, little subtleties. And, like, I should have known that Terry had seen something on film study, but I had no idea what he had seen and what he knew and what he would then tell me. Just unbelievable stuff. I mean, listen to that answer. Now, maybe some of you don't care, but that's how you score touchdowns. That's how you win games. That's how you get to the Pro Bowl, whatever little that matters. That's how you get to January. That's how you win championships. The work that goes in. You know, everybody talks about how much they work, and I'm not saying guys don't work. But everybody talks about how much they work. But I don't know if every receiver is doing what Terry does. Again, away from the practice field, away from Sundays. Maybe they all are. Maybe they all are. And one other thing. Now, I said all week, I shouldn't have said all week. I maybe like mentioned it once or twice. But I really got into it on Friday. And I said, Cliff Kingsbury, and this was when we thought Brian Robinson would be playing, which we did until Sunday morning, right around 11 o'clock. Kudos to Mike Garofolo for seeing a bad workout on the field. And then we found out for sure about 11:15, 11:20. I said all week, and especially on Friday on this show, attack Deontay Banks. And they, two touchdowns. Both of those touchdowns were against Deontay Banks. And you just heard his explanation on the one. Both of those touchdowns on Deontay Banks. Why? One, he's having a tough year. Two, he's in the major chateau bow wow of Brian Daboll and the Giants staff. They have been on his ass. They benched him in Pittsburgh. They have been on his ass. Bad tackling, bad hustle, bad everything. You attack people that show consistent weakness. And even though he's a first round pick, even though he a Terp, you knew your best versus a dude that should be their best that also likes to bark. And they have had some battles, as we mentioned last week, as we mentioned on Friday. Again, this is why you got to listen to the show. I'm not always right. I'm wrong a lot. But, man, let me tell you something. Hit this one out of the park. I don't know who else was talking. I heard nobody else talking about it. But to me, that was a huge matchup. And we hit that one right on the head. We also got one right on the defense. We'll get into that as we go along. Coming up next, you'll hear Alex Ovechkin's pursuit of greatness. And we will bring that to you thanks to our friends at M Street Bank. When the Capitals split a weekend series in Carolina and as well beat the Columbus Blue Jackets at Capital One Arena on Saturday afternoon. We'll hear it next on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Near wing for Ovechkin. And Protas with some room. Here comes Strome. The D trying to get back for Columbus. Strome will stick handle across to Ovechkin. He scores! Alex Ovechkin buries it from the top of the left circle. 5:26 to go. It's 4-0 Washington.
All part of a 5-goal first period on late Saturday afternoon at Capital One Arena. John Walton, the voice of the Caps, on the call. Alex Ovechkin with that, at that point, score his 6th goal of the year, along with two helpers. Again, a big blowout runaway win against the Columbus Blue Jackets and a 7th win on the year for the Washington Capitals. Then, on Sunday afternoon, after traveling down to Raleigh against the very tough Hurricanes, Alex Ovechkin did it again.
Blue line to Carlson. Pulling it in toward the dots. Got to get something here. Across to Ovechkin. Touch pass to Carlson. And Ovechkin scores! A shot from the left side! The hammer from the office with 44 seconds left here in the first period. Here tied at 1, and Alex Ovechkin does it again. That's his 7th goal of the season.
Oh, what a great couple of calls there from the voice of the Caps, John Walton. 7 goals, 7 assists in 11 games, 14 points. And a +8. And even though the Capitals lost last night, they just ran out of gas. Alex with, again, a monster week in which, starting with the Rangers win on Tuesday night, that I was at on the glass, by the way, Alex Ovechkin, all he had was 5 goals this week. Oh, and 4 assists. And by the way, his pursuit of greatness already at, for Ovi, 860 goals. By my count, Wayne Gretzky scored 809. That's not my, by my count, this is reality. 894 by my account. He's 34 away from tying it and 35 away from breaking it.
I guess Wayne Gretzky might have more goals that we don't know of.
Maybe. Alex Ovechkin's pursuit of the great one is presented and scored by Main Street Banks. Cheer local, bank local, put their team in your office. Visit mstreetbank.com for more information. So again, he sits on 860, 7 goals, 7 assists in 11 games. And oh yeah, by the way, Alex Ovechkin, one of the NHL's three stars of the week. And as a matter of fact, Vic, this just in, he was the first star of the week. He scored in all four games, as we mentioned, 5 goals, 4 assists, 9 points, and a +7. The Capitals are now 8-3. I think I said 7-2 after Saturday. They're now 8-3. They were 8-2 after Saturday. And I believe, I haven't done the math on this, but I believe going into last night's game, they were the top scoring team in the NHL. So for all that's worth.
By the way, they scored 5 goals or more in like the 7 out of 8.
Yeah.
I mean, they're tearing it up right now.
And I'll give you one other thing that, Vic, I'm sure you as a big hockey fan and a big Caps fan, you know, that I've mentioned a couple of times. They have had 5 wins at home against Dallas, Vegas, the Rangers, Montreal, and Carolina. Not Carolina, Columbus, in which they have not allowed a single goal in the third period.
That's
5 wins.
Incredible.
And they have not allowed a single goal in those 5 wins in the third period.
And I think I saw something where when they put up 5 goals against Columbus in the first period, this was the Saturday game,
mm-hmm.
where they were on pace to scoring 800 goals the way they were going.
Right.
But I think the last time they put up 5 in a single period was 2008. I mean, we're talking young guns, Nick Backstrom, Mike Green, Alexander Semin. I mean, that's how long ago. Since last time Washington was able to put up that many goals in one single period.
And that was, Bruce was here in all of 2008, right? He took over in 2007, or was it middle Thanksgiving-ish of 2008? I can't remember.
That wasn't Glenn Hanlon, right? Or
yeah.
Where Bruce took over for Glenn Hanlon?
Yeah, it was Glenn Hanlon, right?
I have to look that one up.
Yeah,
was Adam Oates was after?
Yeah, Adam Oates was after Bruce.
Was after.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, a historic week for the great one, Alex Ovechkin, and it's all brought to you by our friends at Main Street Bank. Again, visit mstreetbank.com for more information. When we return on the other side of 3 o'clock, Jay Gruden, the former head coach of the Washington Redskins, longtime offensive coordinator, and our pal, helps us break down another Commanders win and more on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.